With SDPB News, I'm Jackson Dirks. The Government Oversight and Audit Committee, or GOAC, subpoenas South Dakota Secretary of State Monet Johnson.
I move to place on the agenda consideration of a subpoena to require Monet Johnson, Secretary of State, to appear before this committee.
That's Representative Marty Overweg, who's vice chair of GOAC. The subpoena comes after legislators claim Johnson failed to appear before the committee to give testimony on a voter registration system some question. SD Canvassing, an election integrity group, has called into question the No Ink contracts with the Secretary of State's office. The company provides electronic poll books. She testified in May before GOAC, but members on the committee claimed she didn't fully answer questions regarding the state's contract. Overweg called the motion one GOAC had to do.
I would just like to add my personal opinion of how I believe unprofessional this is, that we have to go this route when an elected official will not come and answer to the people who they serve. And that is us acting as this committee, that we're the people's voice.
The committee voted unanimously to subpoena the Secretary of State for failing to appear multiple times before GOAC after saying she could. GOAC Chair Taffy Howard said they had requested Johnson's appearance at Thursday's meeting.
We're told she would be here, and then now she is not here. We were informed yesterday she would not be here. So there are a lot of questions. Election integrity is a critical issue to every citizen of this state.
Howard said with Monet Johnson being the top election official in South Dakota, election integrity is her duty. Senator Ernie Otten is on GOAC. He said it's time for the committee to, quote, step up.
And I do feel that we have been slighted and that we're actually being treated, since it is a constitutional office, that we're being treated as below that.
In a statement to SDPB, Secretary Johnson called safe elections her top priority as secretary. She wrote, quote, I told the GOAC committee that today wouldn't work for my testimony because of a county auditor training, and I sent a letter responding to their questions. I'll continue to work with them to transparently do my job for the people of South Dakota. SNAP, a nationwide food benefits program serving nearly 75,000 South Dakotans, runs out of money November 1st. For one South Dakota grocer and benefactor, this represents a catastrophic failure on the part of Washington politicians. SDPB's CJ Keene has more.
For R.F. Bowie, the founder of the nonprofit Team Bowie Cares and the president of the grocery chain G.F. Bowie Company, his dedication to minimizing hunger started at an early age.
There was a young mom that was coming through the check stand, and she didn't have enough money for groceries. And my dad went over and quietly gave the money so she could put food on her family's table that evening. After she left, I asked my dad, why'd you do that? And he just said, RF, when you're in this business, it's your moral obligation to make sure no one goes hungry. And I've just never forgotten that.
Now, as both a business owner and lobbyist, Bowie says it's inexcusable for 42 million Americans to not have food assistance.
Figure it out. That's all I can say is figure it out. We are playing with people's lives, and figure it out. We can disagree on other things all day long, but I don't think anybody can disagree that food is a necessity.
In response, Team Bowie Cares has opened a new program seeking to keep families fed.
Our current initiative is a SNAP relief fund, and we are going to give as many SNAP households $100 worth of groceries. Team Bowie Cares has, we've committed $250,000. I just think it is, going back to my great grandpa, it's the right thing to do.
100% of any further donations to this initiative will go directly to the SNAP Relief Fund rather than administrative pay. A link to more information and how to donate for SNAP Relief Funds and a full interview between Bowie and Lori Walsh can be found online at sdpb.org/news. I'm SDPB's CJ Keene.
With the South Dakota legislature's approval of a new men's prison, the state is grappling with a harder question: how to create meaningful change in the lives of incarcerated individuals while they're behind prison walls. The governor-appointed Correctional Rehabilitation Task Force's initial meeting opened a line of communication between 30 task force members and the Department of Corrections. The DOC has come under fire by the legislature recently for some of its policy changes. The task force largely asked for more data centered around programming, success rates, and more information around the DOC's current rehabilitative efforts. Sioux Falls Senator Chris Carr explains why he likes the data behind different programs.
For a couple of reasons. One, We're all here to evaluate what our current situation is, and two, probably make recommendations, and or we're going to have to defend why we should support this and why our colleagues should support this and my appropriators should support this.
During committee discussion, Carr said the task force should add a third-party group to analyze South Dakota's DOC. He says it would add credibility to the task force's work.
We got a lot of people donating their time, and we got to call balls and strikes and own our stuff sometimes. And frankly, again, what we're hearing presentations and everything sounds great, but our numbers just don't show that, or at least they show that we could do better. And also, when I talk to some of the stakeholders, the things they're telling us are not the same as what we're hearing from the operational standpoint.
Later during discussion, Representative Greg Jameson motioned to engage the Council of State Governments Justice Center as a third-party consultant. He called its services and capabilities complete.
They could initially start with an audit of our current existing programs, success ratios, cost of all those things, and really give us a solid picture of exactly where we're at. I don't know about some of you, but it was kind of difficult. There were so many programs, so many acronyms, so many things going on. It's like, how do you figure out which one is best or working?
Jameson said he believes the Council of State Governments could also help the task force compare South Dakota's programs to other states, because prison system statistics are often tracked differently on a state-by-state basis. South Dakota Public Broadcasting is retaining 7 of the 15 positions identified for layoffs after the rescission of federal funding. Those 7 positions support local journalism and education initiatives. In August, SDPB announced a 25% reduction in workforce following the federal rescission. The nonprofit Friends of SDPB launched a $2 million bison campaign to save some of those positions and support other ongoing costs. SDPB Executive Director Julie Overgaard says in a statement, quote, "We've seen what's possible when South Dakotans stand up for trusted local media. That spirit of collaboration will carry SDPB into a stronger, more sustainable future." SDPB is continuing its commitment to legislative coverage and open government, broadcasting South Dakota High School Activities Association events, and emergency communications. In the moment, interviews have a new home during Morning Edition and will remain available in podcast form. Harvest season is upon South Dakota farm country, and the State Public Utility Commission says now is the time for farmers to refresh their knowledge of state law and regulation. The commission says it's important to be on top of regulations like licensing and bonding requirements, grain sale protections, administrative rules, and inspection mandates during harvest. Further, the PUC also encourages farmers and grain buyers to contact the board if any questions or concerns remain as the harvest continues. The Public Utility Commission monitors the state grain industry and has the authority to investigate grain buyers and warehouses. Black cats and ghosts may be out for Halloween tonight, but perhaps the scariest situation of the season is irresponsible driving after Halloween parties. The Spearfish Police Department reminds the public to designate a driver, find rideshares or cabs, and that buzz driving is drunk driving. Alcohol-related driving crashes trend upward on Halloween. Since 2019, the police department says about 375 people have been killed in crashes involving alcohol in some way on the holiday. Overrepresented in these crashes are between ages 21 to 34, who constitute over half of all such wrecks. Additionally, the Spearfish PD reminds drivers to be extra vigilant in neighborhoods with trick-or-treaters on Halloween. Artificial intelligence is large, complicated, and controversial. However, some of the professionals at the cutting edge of computer science say there's a way to utilize AI responsibly. SDPB CJ Keene sat down with South Dakota Mines computer science professor Nirmali Thakur to discuss the implications of AI.
My current research explores the interaction data that people generate from their everyday activities. And by everyday activities, we talk about the interaction patterns on social media, as well as interactions with smart and intelligent systems in smart homes and smart cities. So when we talk about interactions on social media research has shown that social media can drive health communication, help people stay more prepared and more equipped during virus outbreaks or any public health concerns. And at the same time, research has also shown that social media can drive misinformation, fake news, which could instill fear, concerns, or anxiety in the global population. And especially in, during some of the recent virus outbreaks, for instance, COVID, monkeypox, measles, and a few others, there are several papers, including some of my own, which showed that the extent of misinformation on social media played a negative impact in sometimes people ignoring health-related information, or just because of the extent of misinformation, they were too concerned or scared to even seek help, and as a result, ended up staying at home when they did not have any symptoms of COVID at all. And when we talk of interaction data from smart homes and smart cities, with the increasing population of the of people aged 65 or more, as in the elderly people, we are headed towards a future where we are going to need systems, resources which are adaptable and personalized to meet each person's needs, because research has shown as a person ages, they could experience memory-related problems, behavioral issues, mild cognitive impairment, dementia, or they could also be prone to falls. So the other aspect of my research focuses on developing personalized and user-adaptive systems that can not just detect falls or any emergencies within a smart home or smart city environment, but it can also take supportive action to ensure that the future of smart homes can be an environment where a person not just ages, but ages in a way that creates a positive impact towards their overall quality of life.
For you, when it came to deciding, like, you were going to use the powers of computer science for good, and, you know, you do this research, you write these papers that could have a real world impact on people's lives, that could potentially save a life if technology is implemented properly. I guess, how does that make you feel knowing that you could be making a very real difference in somebody's quality of life?
His name is Dr. Shia Han. He's retired now, but he was my master's thesis advisor and my PhD thesis advisor as well. So when I joined his lab, right from day one, he taught me and everyone else in the lab is research is not just about writing papers. Research is about your opportunity to create a system, framework, platform, program, or even a simple application that not just leads to a paper that people listen to at a conference, but that has the potential for impacting science, that has the potential for advancing our knowledge and understanding in computer science, and that has the potential for benefiting humanity. So right from day one, he not just inspired me, but inspired everyone in the lab that every day you work in the lab, it is an opportunity for you to advance technology in a way such that the future of humanity would have a better world to live, work, and grow. And those words have constantly been with me and have constantly inspired me in every research project. Even it inspires me till today.
So the very last question that I have for you is, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom about massive data collection efforts, artificial intelligence and the future of it. Yet you have a positive outlook on the potential of this technology. What would you say about your experience in the field to maybe ease those concerns?
I feel whenever as AI developers or AI researchers or AI scientists, we are developing any technology or system or application, developing those technologies in a responsible way is crucial. For instance, like as we speak, we have, for instance, applications of the Minimax algorithm, which is a very popular algorithm in computer science, can be applied to game theory to develop undefeatable games. And I have developed such games myself, for instance, an undefeatable tic-tac, where even the smartest human cannot defeat the computer. When we talk about the advancement of AI, the potential is significant, but at the same time, it is also crucial to develop AI in a responsible way such that the applications of intelligence impact humanity in a positive way, improve our quality of lives, and the future of human AI collaboration, human AI communication, and human AI coordination can create a positive environment for both humans and AI to interact, live, and grow together.
I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks, and that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at SDPB News and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. And as always, thanks for listening.